Since its original appearance in 2001. To look at it on the pictures decorating the cover of the new Led Zeppelin album, it would seem that the object is now back in the year 1950 or thereabouts. Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin has contemplated the object, perceiving in it the messages that others might discover in the pyramids of Egypt, the crucifix of Christianity, for the NBCN.
The meaning behind it has been present throughout time, you know? Its purpose has been there from when time began. We just chose one time to illuminate its presence in society.
And that was the time when Robert Plant and the other members of Led Zeppelin were being born. That is not significant, says Plant.
It could have been any time at all, but we just chose that time as being time to just to show it. It could have been the Middle Ages. It could have been next year, if you like. It'll always be with us.
Always be with Plant, maybe. The object may not be welcome anywhere else. It appeared recently in the home of Led Zeppelin's drummer, John Bonham.
While I was away, my wife received one of these on the table, and they had a tape machine running, and the children were singing, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the gospel truth. When they played the tape back, there was another sound on the tape. That's something to think about. So she put it outside, outside the house. She won't have it in the house.
But the object apparently has a mind of its own. Why has it suddenly set down in the middle of a rock and roll band? Why has it taken on the shape that it has? Like a piece of licorice twist stuck on top of a Bible. Well, explains Plant.
To relate the intention that the object puts across, you know.
And what is that intention?
Well, you've got to work it out for yourself.
The monkey on your back, Gardner, coming to you from the Devil's Hole, a.k.a. Ramble on Towers, Dungeon Studio, in scenic Hesper, Ontario. And you are listening to Ramble on Radio, episode number 117. Ramble On Radio is the only Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to rambleonradio.com for all your news, reviews, and any links I might happen to mention during the show. You could subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. If you're in iTunes, picking up anything you feel like picking up, actually, the new Buddy Miller album. Robert Plant's old buddy, Buddy Miller, has a his buddy. Has a new album out. You're over there picking up the new Buddy Miller album. Do a quick Google for Ramble On Radio, and quick search in iTunes for Ramble On Radio. Find it, leave a review. It helps Ramble On Radio, or it helps iTunes to recognize that we're here, so that when you do search for it, it comes up higher in the list. You can check us out on Podbean at I Am Brian Dammit. You can listen on Spreaker. Be sure to follow Ramble On Radio on Spreaker. That's Spreaker, SpreaKer.com. And now, as of 2 weeks ago, we were on Stitcher Radio. If you have the Stitcher Radio app on your phone, you can follow Ramble On Radio, get the updates, get the podcasts that way. You can also check out Ramble On Radio on YouTube, where I occasionally put up a video of the podcast, which is to say it becomes Ramble On Video, I suppose. Follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. The intro. I'll start with the intro. The intro was, that was a 5-minute intro. I don't normally do, I try to keep the minute, I really keep a close eye on the time of the intro, and I try to roll them about 1.5 minutes. I just find that kind of a nice little time. I don't like it to get much above that. But there's not a lot of point in doing an intro that's only 20 seconds either. So, you know, I go to about 1.5 minutes, and usually if I'm running a song, there's a bit of a change somewhere in there, and I'll fade it out there. In this instance, Wyatt posted on Facebook today, this sounds like it was a radio bit about the object. Sounds like it was from the 70s, and it was a promo for the album Presence, which was released 40 years ago today. This is March 31st, 2016. March 31st, 1976, Presence hit the stores. So, it was just a promo they did, I guess, for the album on the object. We're going to talk a little bit about the object later in the program. The object is, of course, the obelisk, I believe they call it, the thing on the cover and on the inside of the gatefold of the album. The cover has a family sitting around the table with looking at this like they're looking at a Ouija board or something. They're at the yacht club, apparently. In the back cover, there is like a teacher at school with a young boy, and she's got her hand on his head and her hand on the object. And then on the inside cover, there's 8 pictures of different scenes of somebody getting their picture taken in the mountains, a pediatrician with a baby, some people sitting around listening to an album. All of them have the object in the middle of the picture somewhere. So that is the object, the black thing on the cover of Presence. And that radio ad was just, and there was 1,000 of them that Swansong made and gave away as promotional items. Which occasionally turn up, by the way, on eBay and whatnot. And again, I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on. So that was in the middle, squeezed in between, was Wyatt's, or most of the clip. There was a few, I took a little bit out from the beginning. They kind of used the music from 2001 Space Odyssey that the... I know what it's called, but I'm not even going to try. And then a little bit at the end, the guy kind of yaks on a bit at the end. I cut that. I tried to stick with, as much as I could, the relevant Led Zeppelin material. So they got, Robert Plant and John Bonham talking about the object. And then before it and after, before was Nobody's Fault But Mine from This Day Tomorrow. Tomorrow, what have I got? Yes, April 1st, 1977. the 77 tour kicked off, the beginning tour. So that would have been the first time. During that tour, they played two Presence songs, Nobody's Fault But Mine and Achilles' Last Stand. And that would have been the both first time. So tomorrow, Friday, when you're probably listening to this, April 1st, is when Nobody's Fault But Mine and Achilles' Last Stand in 1977 were first performed. So I don't think they played them. Because Robert's leg was bad. I don't think they had any dates at all in 76. I don't think they did some European dates. So I think that's right. But I'm not 100% sure that Achilles and Nobody's Fault But Mine were first done on that tour. So I gave you some of Nobody's Fault But Mine, the first time it was ever played. And then some of Achilles' Last Stand after. So it ends up being about a 5-minute clip, because it's a minute and a half, minute and a half, minute and a half, is what I kind of gave you. So, and like I say, the 77 tour kicked off April 1st, 1977, 39 years ago. And here's the set list from that date. The song remains the same, with the Rover intro, then Sick Again. And they were tied together like the song remains the same and Rain Song was in 73. And then Nobody's Fault But Mine, In My Time of Dying, Since I've Been Loving You, No Quarter, 10 Years Gone, Battle of Evermore, Going to California, Black Country Woman, Bronyard Stomp, White Summer, Black Mountainside, Into Kashmir, Out of the Tiles, Intro into Moby Dick, Jimmy Page's Boeing Solo, Into Achilles' Last Stand, Stairway to Heaven, Whole Lot of Love, Rock and Roll. And a Whole Lot of Love, Rock and Roll would have been the encore. Some notes. According to Wikipedia, some notes. Dancing Days was played after going to California. Interesting spot. After going to California on May 26 and June 27. So twice only was Dancing Days played. And notice that set list. So it's after going to California. So that is No Quarter, right? Then 10 Years Gone, Battle of Evermore, Going to California, Dancing Days, Black Country Woman, Bronwar Stomp, White Summer. So really, in the middle of the acoustic set, they threw in Dancing Days. According to Wikipedia. You always have to kind of add that, because some stuff could be wrong in there. Although I've yet to actually find something that's wrong. Everybody's heard the stories. Typical encore of the Led Zeppelin tour. The first part of the Led Zeppelin tour, the typical encore was actually Rock and Roll and Trampled Underfoot. The Whole Lot of Love / Rock and Roll encore. It was kind of the latter half-ish of the tour. Again, according to Wikipedia, there was three legs. They were done in the second and third leg. The first leg was Rock and Roll, Trampled Underfoot. Second and third leg was Whole Lot of Love, Rock and Roll, typically. And I looking it over, there was really a third and fourth leg. Fourth leg was only about 4 dates old, though. In the second half of the tour, In My Time of Dying was taken out of the set list, and Over the Hills and Far Away replaced it. And other songs that were played during the encore, just occasionally, sometimes would come on, Heartbreaker, Black Dog, Communication Breakdown, and It'll Be Me. And I'm not sure what song that is. It'll Be Me. I'm Wikipedia'd up here, so I can actually go to page, and we can see what that is. Go to page. It's a Jerry Lee Lewis song, it's a B-side, a whole lot of shaking going on. It'll Be Me from 1957, written by Jack Clement. And Clifford's in the Shadows, Cliff Richard and the Shadows also released a version in August 62. So that's It'll Be Me. So the 77 tour, here's kind of the dates of the 77 tour. April 1st in Dallas, April 3rd, Oklahoma City, April 6th, 7th, 9th, and 10th in Chicago, and I believe it's the 9th that was cut short with John Bonham illness, 12th, Bloomington, Minnesota, 13th, 15th, St. Paul, Minnesota, 15th, St. Louis, Missouri, the 17th, Indianapolis, so April 12th would be that 70s show. They have tickets. Somebody gets tickets. Occasionally I talk about Zeppelin TV references. That's a 70s show. Hyde always is wearing a Led Zeppelin t-shirt. Well, not always. Sometimes something else. But quite often wears a Led Zeppelin t-shirt, has cited them as they're his favorite band of all time. And in an episode in the third season, Donna gets tickets to see Led Zeppelin, and that must be Bloomington, Minnesota, because they're up in, or maybe St. Paul, they're up in Wisconsin. So what show in Wisconsin, you know, maybe Chicago? So there you go, it'll be one of those shows, I bet. It'll be 77 tour, they talk about. Anyway, that's a complete aside. April 17th, Indianapolis. April 1920, Cincinnati. April 23rd, Atlanta. April 25th, Louisville. April 27th, 28th, Richfield, Ohio. April 30th, Pontiac, Michigan. That would be the first leg of the tour. Second leg of the tour would be May 18th in Birmingham, Alabama. The 19th in Baton Rouge. 21st in Houston. 22nd in Fort Worth. 25, 6, 8, and 30 of May in Landover, Maryland. The 31st in Greensboro, North Carolina. The 3rd of June in Tampa. 7th, 8th, 10th, 11th, 13th of June in New York City. 13th and 14th, sorry. I apologize. And the 19th of June in San Diego, California. So 5 days off and then off to California. 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 25th, 26th, and 27th of June in the Forum in L.A. And then 17th July, Seattle. 20th July, Tempe, Arizona. 23rd, 24th of July, Oakland, California. And then the tour was stopped abruptly to the tragic death of Robert Plant's son. So I was wrong. Yes, there are three legs there. There's the kind of April leg goes to, starts yesterday, goes run through, all through April. And then there's one that starts on 18th of May and ends the 27th of June after the L.A. dates, Inglewood, California dates. And that would be the Forum. And then 17th of July picks up. So that would be the third leg. Third leg would have only been 4 dates old. So that's this, and I didn't really mean to talk too much about the 77 tour, but it's interesting, isn't it? Next year we'll talk more because it's the 40th anniversary of the 77 tour, and certainly next year it'll be, there's a lot to talk about with the 77 tour. 77 tour was a very weird tour. But some of the shows are so good, and some of the... there's a couple of things there. The bootlegs are often better quality than they were earlier, just because equipment's getting better. And people are getting better at this, at doing this as well, at bootlegging. And some of the shows are really, the Maryland shows are well bootlegged. And sound excellent. I really like these shows. This is, I'm a fan of these later tours. Mostly because they're playing, full set lists of songs from their career. Whereas, obviously, in 1973, they weren't playing anything for Physical Graffiti or Presence. They hadn't written Achilles' Last Stand yet. They were probably playing it. Whereas by 77, Achilles' Last Stand is just dynamic on tour when Page is on. Of course, 77, Page was having his... reputed drug issues. I don't think it's ever been verified. I mean, almost everybody talks about it, but it's never really been verified. Not the way, say, Keith Richards' drug issues in that era were being verified by Keith himself and the people close to the Stones. So we'll say Jimmy's reputed drug issues, and. Some of the shows are, he's a little more sketchy in some of his playing. But not a lot. It's not a lot. But when he's on, he's still really dynamic. And I've told this story before, but I remember in the day reading, I believe it was Hit Parader. Could have been Cream. I believe it was Hit Parader. And they were talking about the L.A. shows, I believe, and Keith Richards attended one, and afterwards he made the comment that there's only one guitar player alive in the world who could play Achilles' Last Stand and he just watched him play it. So when he was good, he was really, really good, even still at this stage. And even still today, by the way. That's worth saying. So that's all I want to say on that tour. Like I said, I'll get to more of it later. You know? Now, the object, I mentioned what the object is. It is the thing on the cover. And they made, Swan Song made 1,000 of these guys. They gave out as promotions. And they have value now. They're collector value. Now, there's all sorts of objects out there. You can make your own objects. It's not a complex thing. And I should probably, I don't know. I should see if I can get plans and make one. I'm pretty handy. And there have been people who, there is companies that just make like a ceramic one. And it's just a paperweight that you can stick on your desk. And I would love to get one. One of these days I will get one. And it doesn't have to be, well, a legit would be cool. It doesn't have to be a legit one. I wouldn't necessarily spend $1,000. I wouldn't spend $1,000 on one. I might spend $100 on a legit. I'd be shocked if I could get a legit for $100 though. Whereas people sell them for like $40, these other non-legit ones. So, that'd be neat. I'd like to have one of those. And I don't even know why. So I found this video on YouTube today. And it says, how to tell if you have a legit object. So here's some things he pointed out. He has a legit one. He was going over it and pointing out exactly what it all is. So on the base, it's the object is, you know, it's a foot high. And there's a 4x4 base. And by the way, that's one of the things. It's a foot tall, 4x4 inch base. And about half inch lettering, it says Led Zeppelin. And then, and that's facing you, okay? You got this? So make it a turn, 1/4 turn to the left. It says in smaller letters, presence. 1/4 turn left, sorry. Led Zeppelin in 1/4 inch letters. 1/4 turn left, it says a number of 1,000. So /1,000 or of 1,000. Whatever your number is, they're all numbered 1 to 1,000. So 642 of 1,000 in smaller letters than Led Zeppelin. Another left, same size letters, the 1/4 inch letters again, it says presence. 1 more 1/4 turn left, and it says in smaller letters, the object, copyright 1976 Swan Song Inc. If you find the video, take a good look at it, because he says it says incorporated, but if you look at the base, it actually just says Inc. Which is important, right? Because that's if somebody was bootlegging it and they actually wrote the whole word incorporated, that could happen. The finish on it, the paint finish, is matte black. It's not shiny at all. It's a matte, flat, matte black. Not shiny. I guess a lot of the ceramic ones come out shiny. It's 1 foot tall, 12 inches or just under 12 inches. The base is definitely 4x4. And there is a sticker on the bottom. And the sticker says, Alva Museum Replicas, Alva, New York. And finally, if it's got any chips on it, it should, if it's just a surface chip right underneath the black, it'll be like a reddish-brown flesh tone color. And then beyond that, it's pure white. And that's a way to tell that you have a genuine object from the album cover of Presence. Okay, so let's talk Presence. An album I've grown very, very, very fond of over the years. Here I have it. I'm holding it up for you to hear. I have the album here. I'm actually prepared today. And it's worth noting. White cover, off-whitish. And it has, if you have, especially if you have an oldie time album from, say, 1976-ish. I think I bought mine in about 1980. So it's one of the early days ones. It says Led Zeppelin Presence in white on the white cover. Hard to see. And they did have a sticker on it that kind of highlighted that had it in black, but it was a sticker on the plastic, you know. But it's raised. It's raised lettering on the actual cover. So if you get an album and it doesn't have raised lettering on the front, it's not an old school 76 album. And also the swan song fella on the back. In the back left corner, there's the angel. The swan song angel. And it's raised in the cardboard, so you can feel it. It's Braille. It's a Braille Swan Song logo, and it's Braille Led Zeppelin. All right. And then, like I say, it's a gatefold, and when you pull it out, there's a picture of the object on a white inner sleeve, and it gives you the set list, and it's both sides. It's a picture of the object, and it gives you a set list, and it gives you all the executive producer, blah, 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 blah. Here's what you need to know. Set list. I'm going to put my glasses on here. Reading glasses. So you guys on YouTube, if I was doing this, and it actually says on the bottom corner, the object in brackets, copyright 1976, Swan Song, Inc. So I guess if you actually made ceramic ones and sold them on eBay, you'd technically be breaking the law. And actually looking at it on the inside cover, which I think it's supposed to be like this, but it looks weirdly like it's different. It's four-sided. It goes to a point on one side, and it does not go to a point on the other side. Optical illusion, I'm guessing. All right, so here's the set list for it. The track list, I guess, is the actual choice of words. Achilles Last Side 1, Achilles Last Stand, For Your Life, Royal Orleans. Side 2, Nobody's Fault But Mine, Candy Store Rock, Hot Song for Nowhere, T41. Alright, so I do not have this on cassette. I have everything else. I do not have it on cassette, but I did check. And the set list is identical on cassette. Side 1, Side 2, Side A, Side B, they tended to call them on cassettes. But this is what it was. And I have it on 8-track. If you have a CD, the CDs also have the exact same track list, except, of course, it's not side one, side two, one side on a CD. And I have a CD, I have one that was mastered in 2002, I believe. It was digitally remastered from the original master tapes by George Marino at Sterling Sound. And I believe it was around 2002 this was released. This is, and I've said this before, this is so hot. This particular version of it is so loud, so bounces, it jumps at you. This is a great, great version of the CD. I like it better than the remasters, although the remasters, what I listen to these days, it's in the car, and it's just, it's a small plastic cardboard label, so it's easier to throw it around. The 8-track, on the other hand, has a different track listing, and that's why I'm going through all this, because you're going, well, of course, the cassette and the CD have the same track listing. Yes, well, the 8-track does not. So here we go. 8-tracks, for those who don't know, there were 4 tracks on an 8-track. Each track was a stereo track, which made them 8. Because it's, so you would get, so like a cassette has side one, side two, it's almost like this has side one, side two, side three, side four, but instead of you turning the tape, the head moved on the tape. So it's a thicker tape, and the head read the first track, 1A, 1 left, 1 right, 2 left, 2 right, 3 left, 3 right, 4 left, 4 right. That's the way the head read, or right, left. And that's the way it was recorded. So that's why there's 8 tracks. 4 tracks. Each track is a right and a left soundtrack. So my 8-track has track 1 is Achilles Last Stand. A grand total of 10 minutes, 21 seconds. And it does give you the time. Track 2, For Your Life and Candy Store Rock. 10:31. Track 3, Hot Song for Nowhere and Nobody's Fault But Mine. That would be 11:06. And track 4 is 12:25. Royal Orleans. And T for one. And I'm willing to bet Royal Orleans is over on, you know, the first 40 seconds is actually on track 3. And then it fades out. One of the ways these things would fade out, click, the track head would move, and then it would fade back in. I bet you they did that with Royal Orleans. But there you go. So there you go. That's And it actually says on the 8-track, recorded and mixed at Musicland Studios, Munich, West Germany, engineered and mixed by Keith Harwood, tape engineer Jeremy Gee, cover by Hypnosis and Hardy, executive producer Peter Grant, produced by Jimmy Page. And on the Swan Song stuff. So it's got all the goo on the 8-track. It's just, So, and my particular 8-track does not have the object on it anywhere. Even though it does say the object is copyrighted, 1976 Swan Song, it's not on it anywhere. But it's a pink 8-track, which means it came from the club. You could order, and we get, you know, come with a TV guide, would be this TV Guide Kids, or this is this little magazine, it was about 6 inches by 4 inches, and it had all the TV shows for the week in it. And people actually bought it. People actually went to the grocery store and bought the TV guide. So, and that's not a generic name. TV Guide was an actual magazine, book. Anyway, in the TV Guide or in Time Life or whatever, you would get these like an advertisement and send away, get 10 8-tracks for, or 10 LPs or 8-tracks or cassettes or CDs even. I joined the CD club many times for 99 cents or $1.99 or $4.99, depending on when and what. And what you were doing was buying directly from the record companies. And they were basically selling. So Columbia House was the big one. Columbia House was Columbia Records and CBS or one of the, something like that. And so you were basically, but yeah, you were buying directly from them. And they would make specific copies of the albums or 8-tracks just for the club. And the way it worked is, you would get your 8 LPs for 99 cents, and then over the next 3 years, you had to buy another 8 LPs for kind of full price. And full price means not on sale. And you had an obligation. So at the end of the day, you actually ended up buying, probably paying, you got a discount off the end, but not a huge discount. But you were buying directly from the record company, so for them, it was still a good deal. And it was like you were buying them on sale, right? At the end of the day, it kind of balanced out, probably about 60% off if you went to the store. The problem with them was you got a limited-ish choice, and you had 2 years, and they would send a disc of the month, and you had to reject it, or they would automatically send it. So every once in a while, you get caught buying some crap you had no interest in. And I mean, you know, Sing Along with Mitch Miller's Greatest Hits, that sort of thing. I bought it from the Led Zeppelin. I got a Mitch Miller 8-track. That sort of thing happened. The other side of the coin, by the end of it, you often were struggling to find, oh, I bought it. Well, I've bought everything I'm interested in the catalog. And now I have 2 months left to buy 3 more LPs, and oh, it looks like I'm buying Carly Simon. I'm no interest in that obscure Carly Simon LP, but I guess I'm getting it. Is kind of what happened. So that was the downside. I joined a number of times. I'd say about 3 times in the 80s for the CD club. And, you know, you kind of figured it out. And yeah, there are stuff I have that I probably wouldn't have otherwise. It's not necessarily stuff that I'm disappointed that I have. You know what I mean? So that's what I... So this is a club edition. And so it doesn't have the object or anything on it, I guess is what I'm getting at. All right. So Presence was recorded in 1976 in Munich after Robert Plant's car accident. What happened was the band had to leave England for tax reasons. And then, and people talk about this. It's everybody did it, and they called it being a tax exile. And what you have to understand is every penny they made over $200,000, £200,000, I guess, which was real wealth, by the way. Say $500,000, maybe even $1 million now. Every penny got taxed at 98%. So, A, if you weren't careful, I mean, if you were a big-selling band and you made 10 million pounds in a year, If you were, you know, you spend some of that. Your first 200,000, you're fine. But everything after, what you actually made was about another, you know, of the 10 million, you ended up keeping, so I got another 200,000. So you went out and bought a 600,000 pound house. Well, that's expensive for a house even then and there. But you know what I mean? You find yourself in tax trouble, find yourself owing money, even though you've paid $9 million. That sort of thing. These guys are making the kind of money where it just made no sense to stay. And so they didn't. They moved to L.A. or they moved, in the Stones' case, to France. And what happened is lawyers and management would make deals with other countries where they could stay for whatever. Without problem, without tax problems, without draft issues or anything like that. So the guys in Zeppelin retired to L.A. on the whole. Robert, coming home from his accident, actually had to be... He got shipped to hospital. His wife got shipped to hospital. He was very sick. But Plant could only stay about 3 or 4 days. Then he got shipped out of England completely. Otherwise, he would have overstayed. And if you didn't live in England for... Like, if you lived there for X number of days, then that's when you owed the money. So they would leave England for 9 months of the year or whatever it was. So off to LA they go, and they're living in the canyon, and Jimmy was writing, and they got together and they wrote some songs and they talked about songs and they planned the album. And then off they went to Mune. Then they kind of retired to whatever. All went their own separate ways for another couple of months, and they got back together in Munich and recorded the album. And they recorded the album. They often talk about they recorded the album a very short period of time. They recorded it in something like a week. And Page laying down overdubs like crazy. Sounds like, if he had a drug problem, he was heavily on the speed or something as well at this time. Because he stayed up all night, many nights, is the reports, is what he says. Just killing it, just making it happen. He begged the Rolling Stones were coming into the studio immediately after them. He begged them for an extra day to finish overdubs. And Keith Richards comes in and says, "So what? I got it all done." He says, "This is what we're doing, like one song." He says, "No, entire album. I did the entire album's overdubs overnight," which was unheard of at the time. Which, of course, 10 years earlier would have been exactly how things were done. So nothing out of the ordinary, really, but out of the ordinary for the time. I don't know if I have much more to say on the album. I have grown over the years to love this album. Difficult album to like, because there's a lot of darkness on it. And I think that's a period thing. I think kind of heavy, ponderous, dark albums were of the era somewhat. Punk was just starting to emerge, and that's kind of heavy and ponderous and not optimistic, not sunny. It's not Walking on Sunshine, right? Katrina and the Waves wasn't a punk band. But Bruce Springsteen in 76, 76 or 77 did Darkness on the Edge of Town, which is his darkest, kind of moodiest album. Seemed to be of the time frame that's the sort of thing was out. And in the movie world, you were getting Taxi and stuff like that. So it was an odd time for art, I think, and a dark kind of mood seemed to be upon the world or of popular culture. So it's a tough album to like initially because it is kind of a dark album. But Achilles' Last Stand is full of humor when you consider what it is, somebody did like Led Zeppelin's worst songs or something on one of these magazines, and he had no idea what he was talking about in Achilles' Last Stand. So for the record, Achilles is a Greek god who was supposed to be undefeatable. He was the Titanic of Greek gods. He was supposed to be unsinkable, undefeatable in battle. Undefeatable in battle. And he took an arrow to his heel. and went down. It was his one weak spot. Was they call it the Achilles heel, that bone that runs up the very back of your foot, kind of between your foot and your leg. That's your Achilles heel. And that's, he took an arrow and it was his one weakness, and somebody found the weakness and down he went. And Robert Plant, in the 75 tour, kind of did the I'm a Greek god thing, and the Greek god comparisons were being made to Greek, you know, Plant with his long hair and his blonde hair, and so the kind of in the media they would refer to him as a god figure or a Greek god figure or something, like, you know, that sort of talk. And of course he broke his ankle in the car in Greece. So the Greek god breaks his ankle in Greece. Wonder what the song Achilles Last Stand is about. And there's a lot of humor in that. There is a lot of humor within the song if you listen to it. Candy Store Rock and Hot Song for Nowhere both have humor in it. Royal Orleans is supposedly about, is about the transvestites in New Orleans. And supposedly, John Paul Jones found himself on, unwittingly found himself on a date with one. You know, hence the line, New Orleans queens sure know how to schmooze it. It's talking about the queens, the transvestites, the gays in New Orleans. So there's humor. There's lots of humor runs through it. But T for One, Achilles Last Stand doesn't feel like a humorous song. It feels like a heavy song. T for One, definitely a heavy song. For Your Life, definitely a heavy, ponderous song. And nobody's fault but mine. He's talking about drug addiction, right? Got a monkey on my back. Got a monkey on my back. Back. So it's a heavy album in a way, but it's a lot of humor in the album. And over the years, yeah, I've grown to love this album. I have grown to like it so, so much. All right, and so I want to talk, and I want to get through this fairly quick because we're 42 minutes into it. And I knew this was kind of going to be a long one. Thought that I was going to say, yes. okay. Oh, yeah, no, nobody's fault but mine. A while back, I checked one of the YouTube videos. Somebody had commented on one of the YouTube videos that they really liked the day I talked about the theory of the songs. And I had to think about when did I do that? And I realized I talked about Good Times, Bad Times, and how, you know, they start off that first song. It's in the key of A, but you don't hit the chord of A until, and the way he used the chords in that to really kind of bang that song out. So I wanted to hit on some of that. And so he kind of said more of that. And I thought, well, I don't know when that's going to come up. So I would, you know, I try. It's interesting to me. What I wonder is if it's interesting to other people. But as somebody asked, I will say. So I'm going to run in a little bit on Nobody's Fault But Mine. Nobody's Fault But Mine is a really interesting theoretical song. And I've been playing it lately and really digging the song. And I have a guitar with me here because I'm going to have to talk this out. So it's in the key of E. And it starts on an E chord, but really starts on an E7. There's this, right? And it starts with the lick. What that really is that's he's playing it over an E. He's playing a D and moving it, D to a B and moving it up to an A. So he's really playing an E7 here. There's an E7, by the way. There's an E. So can you hear it? That's. E7 to E. So just take on and off the E7. Then, so what you get on that is same the E7, and it goes into what's called a suspended fourth chord. Now, suspended chords are used quite regularly in rock music. Pete Townsend really likes them, and he uses them differently than most people. They usually resolve themselves with the regular chord. So here's an example. Hear that? That's suspended, resolve. And if you listen to Stairway to Heaven, if you do... There's a D there. Or he actually does it... I'm trying to... That's a D suspended four. To a D. That's what that sound is. That's what this sound is. That going from the... That's the suspended note within your chord. Same as Behind Blue Eyes. Right, same chord. So then he repeats with the E7. So he's just playing around the E7, suspended, resolve into a minor, and then... Now this is the resolution of the suspended chord. That's why it's important. This is... That's what he's doing there, which is, you know, if you do it in D, there's a, anyway, so he's pulling off to, from an A to a G sharp there. That's the E suspended to the E. And he finishes off on an E. So E7 is basically the chord there. E suspended 4. We're doing the 7, then suspended to the E, resolves to the E, and they throw in, he throws in that at the end, right? Then, here's the deal, he goes up an octave. It's all the exact same thing, an octave higher. And he actually doubles it. So he continues doing it down here. But he also does it up here. And you get the effect of the doubling. From there, he just goes down an E chord. So everything so far, in other words, everything is just on an E chord. All these notes you're hearing are just an E chord. And he finishes off with rolling an E. Here's an E chord. So what we're doing is that first note, and then off. He's just kind of walking down it. Now here's an E. Off to the A. That's an A he finishes on. So the whole time he's on an E. Until there. Now he's on E, A. Then, as he starts to sing, as the singing starts, he goes up to a D, and he pulls off to A, and then slides up to an E. So he's a D, and then he hits an A note. Talked last time about the relative minor of the A is the F sharp minor. So that last part, he just goes up the minor, G, F sharp minor, works up to the A, then down to the E. And one last thing to listen to in there is when he's singing, I mentioned he's just sliding from a D to an E, but he's pulling off to the A. Slides up to the E. The second time he does it, and every time they're off, throws that in. That works if you play a little guitar. You know, if you play an A chord, you can play, you can move straight into a D without moving the hand. And it becomes the sort of thing that goes that sound. And it's used a lot in rock. And instead of playing a bar chord, you play just with one finger over the three strings. And then you can just drop the other two fingers down. And I would have to show it to you to explain it, but this is what he's doing. And it's a very soul thing. A lot of soul songs go. And that's all he's really doing. It's a little throw-in. And it's a very soul, very rockish, soulish thing. So, yeah, I've been enjoying playing that song. And that's part of it, has been kind of working out, you know, the way the lick is, all the licks, all the notes are really just bouncing off an E chord or an E seventh chord. And you don't have to know that stuff to play it, you know. Like, if you're a young player or you don't play much, you don't have to know that stuff. But it's interesting to realize that you know, the band's kind of, you know, the bass has got the E, holding the E chord. What he's really doing is playing around the chords, playing arpeggios, to a degree at least. There's lots of extra notes in there. But they are what they call passing tones, which ones that they hit and move on from. They don't hold. Every time he stops, every time he holds for more than half a beat or a beat, it's a specific note and a specific chord. The notes that stand out in your ear are either that E7, the E suspended, or the E itself. They either create those sounds. That's kind of what you need to know. Anyway, so there's my little go, little theory explanation. I hope I didn't make that weirdly confusing. Hope I didn't screw you all up. I didn't know how to explain that without the guitar, and I don't know that it works best with the guitar. But I wanted to have a go at trying that again, at doing some theory explaining. So that's going to be it. I think, let me check. Well, you know what I didn't do? I didn't do the other history. Well, there's not really much. Peter Grant was born on April 5th, 1938. That's the other thing coming up next week, I guess. It's Peter Grant's birthday. It would be the anniversary of his birth, I suppose. So that's it. That's it. Today, 40th anniversary of Presence being released. So go listen to Presence. Go love this album. It is a great album. Put on the headphones and just dig on it. And that's it for Ramble on Radio, episode 117. Check Ramble on Radio for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links I might mention. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes. If you go to iTunes, leave a review. Listen on Stitcher Radio and on Spreaker, Spreaker. Be sure to follow Ramble on Radio at Spreaker. Be sure to follow me or whatever on Stitcher. And download it from I Am Brian Dammit on Podbean. Check out Ramble on Radio on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and I mentioned Facebook there. I think the video from today that I played in the intro, I believe, that is, what you're going to say now, that is on the Facebook page now. That's where I got it from, I believe. So thanks for listening to Ramble on Radio, episode 117. Keep it coolin', babies.
There'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.